There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Beasley switches it in. The U.S. go up. What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra.
Lloyd will try a long hit. What a goal from Lloyd.
This is spectacular. It's hit with no regard for humanity. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is. Switzerland. And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute. That was worth the price of admission alone.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Tonight, as always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. Glad you've joined me again tonight. Two consecutive nights here on the great ESPN 97.5. So a lot to get into here tonight. We're going to start off this first segment with a lot of Dynamo talk here. Don't forget, hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Soccer Matters. Just click on subscribe. It's all you got to do. The clicks, the hits, the comments, the likes all make a difference in keeping things going on all Soccer Matters platforms. So very much appreciate all that. Hey, listen, I'm still blown away from last night's interview. Jim Tietjens, a former professional goalkeeper. So just to kind of go back in time, 1984, I moved to Houston. Houston Dynamo's professional soccer team. We were coming after the Houston Hurricane. This is the chronology of professional soccer in Houston. So we got to the league final as an expansion team. Of course, there wasn't that many teams in the league. I think there were eight teams, nine or 10, something like that. So we're playing Fort Lauderdale in Lauderdale. It's a best of three series. We've played them in Houston. We lose in a shootout, which is when you got the ball on the 35-yard line and then dribbled and did a one-on-one with the goalkeeper. So Fort Lauderdale won the USL title. They had a lot of big names, Nenny Kubias from Peru, Dave Watson, who captained England, Asta Hartford, who played for Scotland, Keith Weller, who ultimately came to Houston for a year from Leicester City. They had the bigger names, maybe, but we had a very good team. Beto de Santos, Jose Neto, Tony Johnson, Bill McDonald, Mike Barbrick, a lot of good guys. Anyway, he was the goalkeeper that day for the USL team, the Fort Lauderdale Sun, who won the title. He just put a book out, and if you listen to the show last night, the book's called Saves. It's available on Amazon. It chronicles, and I'm telling you, this is incredible, an inspiring perseverance from a man that has had, now check this out, from 32 on, this guy has two heart replacements, two heart transplants, beats cancer twice, has pneumonia over 12 times, peripheral artery disease. And genetically, I guess, and I'm being careful here because I'm not a doctor, this disease called idiopathic cardiomyopathy ran in his family. It took his father at a young age, took his two sisters. So this is an incredible story. Make sure you listen on the podcast at Spotify, Google, Apple, or at ESPN 975. You will say to yourself, you know, at what point does a human being give up, getting challenge after challenge, losing family members? I hope you get a chance to check it out. As always, we stream at ESPN975.com. Love all the chatter coming back and the content that I get from a lot of people on X, on both Glenn Davis Sock and at Soccer Matters GD, also on Instagram. Please keep it coming. You know I love soccer talk, but we need your opinion. We need your opinion to lift this thing. I don't think the coverage of the game in Houston, outside of the volume of it, I don't think it's evolved enough since 2006. Yeah, there are more podcasts. Yeah, there are more people involved. But there's not scintillating commentary. There's not tough questions. It's more like, you know, we got a picture of the purple jersey. And that stuff's great. I don't mind that. I just wish we'd get more healthy pressure because I think all of us need it. Dynamo need it. Dash need it. We've talked about this forever and ever and ever. And I'll cite some examples of this in a minute. But let's get into the Dynamo and Dash. All right, 9 days to go to the MLS start for the Houston Dynamo on February 24th. But don't forget, Tuesday, CONCACAF Champions League, Dynamo go to St. Louis. So again, I got some Dynamo thoughts here heading into 2024. And, you know, I hear everybody, well, it's a quick turnaround. It's tough. You know, I look at that in a positive way and very differently. I like to go positive. So maybe it is slightly shorter, but that's what happens when you're successful in MLS. And you hear Pat Onstad and Ben Olsen talk about that. But I think this means more time for the team to be together after the great success of the Western Conference Final. It's a positive. More time, more games, more camaraderie, more team building, more tactical understanding. Yeah, I think that's a positive. But there is a lot of unknown right now, and there's not a lot came out of Guadalajara. Not a lot of transactional stuff as far as incoming players. And the big story right now, a preseason, can't hide it. It's injury. It's been quiet. But injury is the focus of the offseason at this moment. Now, that'll get erased to a degree once you get into games. But you can make a direct comparison. And I do this because, you know, when I had the radio show in Austin on the Horn, I watched every Austin FC game. And I predicted on my show early, I said, and I'm not saying this is what's going to happen with the Dynamo. I said, it's going to be a different season after that magical run that got Austin FC with Triussi playing out of his mind to the brink of the MLS Cup. I mean, that was just an unbelievable season. Everything fell together. But you also could see striker position was aging. There were some areas, certainly, that needed help. They lost Ruben Gabrielsen, the center back. That was a defining moment for them. Yes, they had injuries, much like the Dynamo. So there are parallels you can draw when you come off these spectacular seasons, right? I mean, the energy that Hector Herrera put into last year on the field was off the chains. Now, this is going to be different playing without him. I don't know how long that's going to be. Nobody's really said anything. We have no idea. But the longer Hector Herrera is out, the more opportunity there is for others. But who really steps up to be the man on this team? Is it Coco Carrasquilla? Can Artur actually do that from the six? You know, Jan Gregusz is the big offseason signing in midfield. You don't have Luis Casado anymore. Nelson Quiñones is now out for the season. Hector, nobody knows when he's coming back. I think Tudane might have said he's going to miss a half a dozen games. So, you know, that's probably a month and a half. But we really don't know because until something formally said from the club, I don't believe anything. The striker position. You know, people wanted that to be addressed from an outside signing. Nothing has happened there. A lot of good support and comments coming about Ebis Ferreira in preseason. There's a lot of social media pictures of him scoring goals, so that's a good thing. But if I look at it right now, it's Steve Clark in goal. You got the veteran there. It's Escobar at left back. It's Mikael and Sviatchenko. Ethan Bartlow backing them up. Dorsey on the right. Artur in the holding position. If you're going to continue with the box midfield, it's Gregusz taking the Hector Herrera role. That leaves Coco and Bossy at the top of the box. And then you're going to likely switch Aliu to the left side to be an inverted winger as opposed to a center forward. And then Sebas Ferreira at center forward if, you know, all the goals being banged in are paying off and he's ready to go this year. I hope so. That would be a great comeback story if he can score goals. But he's going to have to be serviced. It's no different than the question mark going into last year. It's the same one. Where do the goals come from? So you got depth defensively. You got Tate Schmidt coming back, who was impressive, bringing width on the left before terrible knee injury. Kieran Sargent signs from Georgetown. You got depth there. Daniel Starris, I mean, he was a Swiss Army knife last year. Fantastic, very loyal servant to the club, played at either outside back position or center back. Midfield, Sebastian Kowalczyk. I think we're still questioning, you know, what type of level he can contribute to this team. He's technical, that's for sure. Brooklyn Reigns, will he get opportunity? It's possible. The pecking order gets shorter. It means you're closer and closer to getting on the field, but you know, he's coming to a crossroads in his career that he needs games. No question about that. So, you know, a lot to think about. Awful lot to think about. But there's the basis of a lot of good things there still. But your talisman is not going to be there from the start. And all you got to do is go back to look at games last year, the Dynamo without Hector. And you know, it is definitely the complexion becomes very, very different without him there, without the idea man. And that means others have to step up and make decisions, demand the ball, want the ball, to make decisions in the absence of a guy that, you know, look, you funneled everything through because you wanted his intelligentsia. You wanted him making decisions. And the way he orchestrated things last year was something special. So that's going to be a challenge, but it's also going to be something interesting for the fan and all of us to look at till Hector gets back into the fold. So, you know, this is professional soccer. These things happen. All right, let's see here. All right, let's go to Fran Alonso. Big step up for the coach coming from Celtic. He's Spanish, tremendous energy. I loved him in his press conference. A lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. Definitely hoping he's going to succeed. Then again, you have to ask a question that was never asked about the differences of the Scottish Premier League and coming to, as Fran said, the coach, the best league in the world, and that it'll be a challenge, a step up. How does he intend to step up and coach in this league? What does he see as the differences between the SPL and the best league in the world when it comes to the women's game? So that's a big question on that side. Yes, it's exciting. It's enthusiastic. It was last year when Sam Lady was hired. Great uplifting press conference. Everybody pumped. Everybody excited. But time will tell in all these things. Time will tell, and if the changes have worked. I think there's one thing that's very clear coming from the organization and Fran Alonso is that they want to be more attack-oriented. I thought that was what they wanted to be last year. It ended up being a counter-attacking team, which meant one of your most technical players never could get into the final third, that being Maria Sanchez. Effectively, it was a slow dissipation of Ebony Salmon, who never looked happy last year. So, you know, they got to turn it around, but I think this is a coach with a lot of ebullient personality, and time will tell. Looking forward to seeing Fran Alonso grab this challenge and take it. Should be good. All right, the blue card and COVID changes real quick here. By the way, you know, we had the five changes because of COVID. Did we ever know that the pandemic was going to change the game forever, basically? From the standpoint of substitution patterns, I mean, essentially you've created a 60-minute player. Coach can say to somebody, look, you got to go hard. You got to press. You got to chase everything. Do it as long as you can. If it's 45, if it's 50, it's 60, then you come off. Then you get the 30-minute player. He comes on flying in most cases, certainly for teams that are behind. And that definitely affects the speed and tempo of the game. But that is a huge defining changing moment in the history of the game. Okay, YouTube Soccer Matters. Please subscribe. X and Instagram at Glen Davis Soc at Soccer Matters GD. Facebook Soccer Matters and Glen Davis. go to Glenn Davis, you'll see an amazing picture of the Caribbean. GlennDavisSoccer.com. We love those that subscribe, like, follow, comment, call, because all these data points and engagements, they keep us on the air. 22 years soccer on the radio. All thanks to you. Copa America, June 22nd, Mexico, Jamaica, June 24th, Colombia and Paraguay, July 4th, quarterfinal. Get your tickets. February 22nd, 25, 28. How about this? CONCACAF Women's Gold Cup in Houston. If you want to get up close and personal to some of the best in the women's game. And then 2026, you, the Houston soccer community, brought it June 14, 17, 20, 23, 26. I mean, dang. We got a game and then 2 days off and a game. Five in a row in the group stage. And then June 29th, round of 32. July 7th, round of 16. Are you kidding me? Goalpark.org. My friend Batiri, the artist. They're trying to do a wonderful landscaping and great idea. Check it out. Goalpark.org down in Edo. Something special they're working on there. LamontBrands.com. Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats to benefit the 501c charity Snowdrop Foundation. Get them. We're going to take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, brought to you by the one and only John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
Hey, this is a rock and roll museum. You guys don't belong in here.
I'm the king of rock, the end of higher.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right. Copy me, new. Dallow. And the header is firm, decisive, and possibly match-winning from Scott McTominay.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Listen, I can't say enough about our presenting sponsor. It's John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. Look, you get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident. Maybe you drive an 18-wheeler. Look, these are uncomfortable times if you're in an accident. You do need representation. What you do is you go get the best. It's the Daspit Law Firm, John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. Or hit them up on the internet, daspitlaw.com. And by the way, they are bringing soccer to the airwaves, so that's another little feather in the cap for the Daspit Law Firm. Also, quick word here for Hugh O'Connor's Pub out on I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Talk about a great pub, great whiskey offerings, beer offerings, bangers and mash, you name it, all the traditional English foods, shepherd's pie. You get out there, say hi to Dave and Goose, longtime sponsor, Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10 Marquee Entertainment Center. All right, next guest. He's Ken Fogarty. He's a part of the Houston soccer community. Before I get into bringing him on the air, I want to talk a little bit about Ken's dossier here. Came to America to play for the L.A. Skyhawks in the American Soccer League, then the Fort Lauderdale Strikers in the North American Soccer League. Born in Manchester, England, has played against the likes of Franz Beckenbauer, with George Best, Teofilo Cobias, Gerd Muller, on and on. Was a Wizards assistant at Kansas City in Major League Soccer, 99 to 2000. Cayman Islands national team coach. Has done a ton of coaching education, has taught tremendous work with youth in our community here in Houston, Texas. And again, this is what I like to do on this show, is shine the light on people who've done so many different things from a standpoint of passion, expertise, quality in the game of soccer here in Houston. So this is our focus on the Houston soccer community. He is Ken Fogarty. He joins us now. Ken, thanks so much for coming on the show tonight.
Well, Glenn, I'm thrilled to catch up with you again and be on the show. And thank you for the intro. You know, I could have made more stuff up, but that sounded genuine too. That sounded actually genuine, so I'm pleased about that.
Hey, everything we do here is genuine. We don't bring anybody on this show who doesn't deserve to be. By the way, we didn't put in there you and me calling indoor soccer the Houston Hotshots, but maybe that wasn't your top 10. Anyway. So let's, first thing I want to say is just, you know, as someone who's coached in the youth community here in a variety of ways with the Texan Soccer Club in the past, the World Cup coming to Houston in 2026, what does it mean to you?
Oh, well, to me personally, I think it's massive. I just love that. It's funny, Glenn, I've had a really long and interesting career, and I'm coming to the end of this career now. And that would be a great way to finish it off, watching the World Cup here in Houston, you know, because that kind of puts a cap on it. But what a wonderful thing for Houston, you know, to get the World Cup games here, you know, to qualify. Oh, fantastic. It's just, and I really do hope it sets the soccer community alight. I know I'm going to as many games as possible. So fantastic. Just a fantastic experience.
Is it prideful to you? Because we've been getting a lot of testimony on this show. Is it prideful in the sense that, you know, you worked on fields throughout Houston. So did I. So did a ton of people that pioneered the sport here in the days when it was about really creating awareness for it now. And it's evolved. You know, just take me right down to the grassroots level and the connection that the World Cup can have.
Well, I think first off, I'm still a fan of the sport. I've been a player all my life and a coach all my life, and so I am, and I've had a really interesting and enjoyable career. So I'm truly indebted to being a part of the game all my life, and I'm humbly grateful for that. You know, but then again, on the other side of the coin, you know, I was presented with opportunities, and you make the most of them. You know, every opportunity you get, you make the most of it too. So to be involved in the game, you know, at the grassroots level and on a very minor level, you know, it's still extremely rewarding for me. But again, to see now the World Cup come here, you know, which is kind of the height of our game, you know, and so I think that's special. And it's funny, though, I look at things differently now. I look at things differently now than I did 20 years ago. Now, if I look at a soccer game, I'm looking at, I'll give you an example. If I look at a movie now, Glenn, right, I'm not just watching the action. I'm looking at the lighting. I'm looking at the camera angles. I'm looking at the editing. I'm listening to the dialogue. So I see a much more complete picture. And it's the same with the soccer game now. You know, I'm not just looking at the ball. I'm looking at the shape of the team. I'm looking at movement off the ball, to the ball, away from the ball, those kind of things. And I think with the teams that should come here, with the contrast in styles and the flair and the skill, I just think it'll be a wonderful experience.
Ken Fogarty played in the NASL, has coached here in Houston with the Texans. By the way, you said at a minor level coaching, I'm going to beg to differ. I think that may be the most important level because you've lit the fire of passion and excitement around the game of soccer to young people. So I wouldn't downplay that for 1 second.
Glenn, let me just respond to that. The best, I'm finding this happens to me. The best thing that ever happens to me is this. I'll be somewhere, Glenn, and a guy will be across the field looking at me, and I'm thinking, geez, what would they do? He's going to come over and punch me. But then he walks over to me, and the guy will hug me, and he'll say, you coached me like 10, 15 years ago. And that's lovely. And he'll say, and it was a great experience, which I'm flattered and honoured. But what a great experience when people come up to you and say, you actually did make a difference in the life. And I never thought that, Glenn. I never believed that at first. I just thought, you know, I'm just doing my job. And I'm trying to do the job the best I can, coaching people and developing players. But when people come up and say that to you, what a great experience. You can't put a price on that. That's lovely.
There's nothing that comes back greater than that. And the redeeming quality of working with young people and getting that sort of gratification in a different way is, I don't think there's anything better than it. All right, let's go on to the North American Soccer League. Franz Beckenbauer recently passed, Ken, the Kaiser. You played against him. Some thoughts on him.
Well, obviously, his reputation and his performances speak for themselves. But I do have an interesting story about Beckenbauer, Glenn. We were playing up at Giant Stadium, and I pushed up into midfield, and Beckenbauer was in midfield too. And we both went for a 50-50 ball. Glenn, I never pull out, and I give it everything I've got. Like, so I go in as hard as I can, like a train, and win the ball. He goes over the top of the ball, Glenn. He goes down my shin. He knees me in the groin. His shoulder hits me in the chest. And he headbutts me, right? Only one tackle. So he literally knocks me back about 5 yards. So I jump up and I go, yeah, that's the best you've got, you German jackass. Wasn't quite jackass, but so I'm still here. You can't hit me. That's the best you've got. You can't hurt me. And I turn around and Ray Hunter says, yeah, all right. I go, no, he's punctured 2 lungs and broke about 5 ribs. Get me off quick and hit the trainer.
You know what's funny? The other day after he passed, you know, we were doing testimony, and I grew up watching Beckenbauer at Giant Stadium and probably watched games you were in. And I was talking about how he avoided so much physical contact. Yeah, obviously, I wasn't there that day.
Yeah, no, that wasn't his game at all, so I was surprised at that. But it just struck me as funny. He nearly broke me in half.
That's a good one. All right, you played with George Best, and you know, of course, all Manchester United fans that listen to this show, they know the lore of Best. How about something on George?
We used to go out occasionally. Well, every couple of weeks, when I was at Lauderdale, we'd go out and have dinner. And I liked him a lot, Glenn. I mean, I know he was misunderstood. I know he was his own worst enemy. I know he had his demons and his devils. I understand all that. But Glenn, he was great to me. The first practice session we had, Parksy and I had come over from England, and we had no way of getting back home. And I said, can somebody give us a ride home? It was him. He was the first one to offer to drive. It was like 10 miles in the opposite direction from where he lived. And I found him to be a lovely guy. And my favourite soccer memory is of him. I'll tell you, Glenn. We used to go out for dinner once every couple of weeks. And we'd crack jokes a lot, stupid, silly jokes. And then I'd talk about life and stuff that way. But years later, I was in a club. And a friend says to me, who's your favourite player of all time? And this was a packed room, Glenn. And I said, Bestie. Well, no sooner do I say Bestie, and I've seen him in 20, 25 years, that a crowd spills through the door. And he's in the middle of that crowd. And he says, my friend says, go and say hello to him. I says, I don't think so, kind of thing. So about 10 minutes later, it was like a Hollywood movie, Glenn. The crowd parts and our eyes meet across the room. You know, and so I nod and he nods, kind of thing, you know. The next minute, I feel someone tapping the shoulder, turn around, it's Bestie. Glenn, he comes up to me. He says, Fogg, great to see you. And he hugs me and he kisses me on the cheek. Glenn, this is someone I grew up watching on the terraces. When I was on the terraces watching Manchester United play, I was watching him play. And now here he was hugging me and kissing me. Oh, the best thing ever. I was just so moved by that. I had a great, I think I had a good relationship with him as much as one can, you know, but I was honoured.
Did he stay to himself?
What do you mean by that? I'm not sure.
I mean, was he always fully integrated in the team or did he kind of go off by himself quite a bit? I mean, yeah, based on who he was.
Yeah, I think when he was drinking a lot, he wasn't easy to get along with. And he never caused any problems at practice. And he did go missing a couple of times during the season, you know, but because he was different. He had his own demons, you know, he was special, you know. I mean, so from a coach's perspective, I wouldn't have been happy with his behaviour. And as a teammate's perspective, probably not too. But as a fan and as a friend, sympathy for him and loved being around him. And he had a good sense of humour. And I thought he was just so special. I think he had problems, again, Glenn, that most people I couldn't understand. I mean, he was at another level altogether in terms of the game. I mean, just to refer to Bestie, if you type him greatest NASL goal ever, you'll see George Best going around about 8 Fort Lauderdale players, and I'm the last one he goes around. I swear, and I think I've got him, like, and then he goes around me, and he leaves me looking like a penguin on a skateboard, a drunken penguin on a skateboard. That's how I looked. He was incredible. And that was at the end of his career when he was drinking and he was older and he was slower. He was incredible. He was you had to see him to believe how good he was, you know? Oh.
Ken Fogarty joining us here, played in the North American Soccer League. I'm going to say even more importantly, coached a ton of youth here in Houston, Texas. Big part of our Houston soccer community has remained here. This is his home. You had a stint coaching the Cayman Islands, and knowing a lot of guys that have been friends of mine that have coached a lot of the Caribbean nations and having family in the U.S. Virgin Islands, this is not an easy task.
No, that was a great experience, a great life experience. Glenn, you know, I was at Tampa Bay with the Rowdies and Rodney Marsh, and we went belly up on Friday, and we were closing the doors at 5 o'clock, and at 5 to 5, a guy walks through the door, and he was the president of the Cayman Islands Football Association, and he asked me to go down and coach. So I went down and worked with the youth for several months, and then I came back to the US for a month, but then I went back and took the full national team. Glenn, it was a great, great life experience for me. I mean, it was a completely different culture. You know, and the way we approached, we had a big tournament. We were playing against Jamaica in the Shell Caribbean Cup. We had St. Martin's, I think, in the British Virgin Islands, and Jamaica. That was our group for qualifying for the Shell Caribbean Cup. And it was great. We went to Costa Rica and worked together. We came across and played the US national team in preparation for the tournament. And then we had a great tournament, and we actually beat Jamaica and knocked Jamaica out. So in terms of a soccer experience, wonderful. A life experience, fantastic. It was just such a great thing. Even things like, Glenn, we had a house on the beach. So all the squad, we all lived together and we'd cook dinner together, you know, and we'd practice together and then, you know, work. It was just a great experience.
Something different. Ken Fogarty joining us here, 79-83 Fort Lauderdale Strikers, born in Manchester, England. Being born in that beautiful soccer city, that I had the good fortune of going to with a friend of mine, an author, Tom Clare. Do you have fond memories? Were you a United fan? Were you a City fan? Tell me.
I have the best memories. I played for my school on a Saturday morning, and then Saturday afternoon, it so happened, Glenn, if Manchester United were at home at Old Trafford, Man City would be away. And the next week, if Man City were home, Man United would be away. So every week, I'd alternate between Man U and Man City. I was predominantly a Man U fan, you know, but used to go watch them play. And I can still remember the names of most of the players that I watched. But it was funny, Glenn, that years later, when some of those players were coming to the end of their careers, I end up playing with them or against them. Like several of those players came to Fort Lauderdale and stuff, you know. So it was interesting that, like, Bestie would be crying. Brian Kidd, for example, you know, just different players. So it was just growing up in Manchester at that time. I think Manchester was the hotbed. And Manchester United have always been kind of a perennial club with a fabulous reputation. But look how well Manchester City have done in the last few years now to overtake them. So just a great city, a thriving football city, soccer city, and loved it. It was such a good experience.
Well, Ken, so much fun catching up with you. Great to chat with you. I know my listeners are loving this interview. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I look forward to catching up with you very, very soon, and we'll get you back on the show again.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Glenn. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. That's Ken Fogarty. Many, many years coaching and developing youth here in Houston, Texas. Part of the Houston soccer community, North American Soccer League, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, played in the ASL with the LA Skyhawks, Hayman Islands national team coach, you name it, he did it. Remarkable lens to look through, Ken Fogarty. All right, we'll take a break here. A quick word here for my great friend Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. My house is full of it. Got an L-shaped leather couch, chairs for the island in my kitchen, the stressless lounge chair up in my bedroom. The best in modern contemporary furniture, danishinspirations.com. All right, stick with us. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, as always, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
Is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
To play this one in, Neuer, of course, as you would expect, up from the back. And so it's an unguarded goal. And Frimpong, if he can pounce on this one, might be onto something. Being forced wide, and he's on his own. He has a goal! That is hard to finish it! Mark on it, and now it truly is party time here.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. By the way, the world tour for the Rolling Stones with two 80-year-old band members, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, opens in Houston. How about that? Talking about shining the light on us. Yeah, we have the World Cup in 2026. We got Copa America this summer, and you get the start of the tour where the eyes of the world will be on that first performance. Anyway, Soccer Matters brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713, call now. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You want the best. Nobody wants to get in an accident, but if you do, it's the Daspit Law Firm, and they've helped bring soccer onto the airwaves. Now, before I bring our guest on, I do want you to learn a little bit about his background so I can get this context for you. Mark Pulisic is the father of Christian Pulisic. Of course, everybody knows who he is. U.S. International, Dortmund, Chelsea, AC Milan in the Serie A, was just named the Player of the Month. Mark, his father, went to George Mason University, played under Gordon Bradley. Harrisburg Heat, indoor soccer professionally. He's done extensive coaching as well. Lebanon Valley, Harrisburg Islanders in the USL, Detroit Ignition, I believe he was the coach of the year there, Borussia Dortmund's Academy, Rochester Rhinos, Pittsburgh Riverhounds. He's tied very directly to Bob Lilly as well. So this is the context of the father of Christian, and I'm sure he's probably tired of being called the father of Christian. Actually, I don't think he is. Mark, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That's a pleasure.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure people knew about your connection and, you know, your lifelong love and commitment to the game of soccer, starting as a youth out on Long Island, leading up to a professional career and a coaching career. Maybe take us into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I always loved the game. My father introduced me to it growing up on Long Island, him being of Croatian descent. So just grew up playing the game, loved to play the game, and was fortunate enough to receive a scholarship at university and then continue professionally.
Yeah,
kind of those 10 years before MLS started in 96, so the indoor league was pretty big.
Well, having myself played in the ASL and the AISA and mm-hmm. USL, I can say I could not retire with my riches after my career. Could you?
No, I got you. You're right.
Well, anyway, let's talk about the fact that you get back into coaching. Before we get into Christian, and listen, you spent a lot of time coaching and working at the craft here and at a lot of different levels.
I did. I've taken some time off now recently, but always looking to try and get back into the game in some capacity. So, but yes, it's been a passion of mine. I spent my life coaching, did so overseas. So I got a good bit of experience and some great opportunities that I took advantage of, and it's been great.
You know, coaching, having run a youth club for 11 years, I always, even at this point, I say to myself, man, those were some of the greatest learning time periods for me, number one. But number two, I don't feel like anything I've ever been involved with since then has had the redeeming quality, right? When you see kids growing up and now they're coaching their kids or they're a coach at Notre Dame or UConn or they're playing in MLS. I mean, and just simply being a father, loving the sport.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have some great relationships with players still that I keep in touch with. And, there's nothing quite like it, you know, being able to mold some young people into not only good players, but hopefully good people and, have some good lifelong relationships.
Cosmos, Giant Stadium, my gut is you and I were probably at the same games, but you might have been 8 years younger than me, but you may have been at those games as well. That was highly influential for us guys on the East Coast, huh?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I went to Giant Stadium all the time, and my family used to just pack up the station wagon and head out to East Coast for obviously a lot of the home games during the Cosmos existence there, and it's just a great out. I mean, we were very fortunate to see some of those players. It was just awesome.
Yeah, the fact that where we were, and the fact that not that many people got to see Pelé as consistently as we did. So I was on the team, the Pennsylvania Stoners, the greatest soccer name in the history of professional soccer in this country.
I remember it, yeah.
Okay, Keystone State for all of you out there, all right? We weren't all high when we played, but we played the Cosmos in a closed-door scrimmage, and I'm just going to quickly tell this because I think you'll laugh because you mentioned Vladislav Bogicevic, the great Yugoslavian midfielder.
Yeah,
so we're walking out to play this, and I happen to be next to him in the tunnel, and I'm a rookie. And he's smoking a cigarette as we walk onto the tunnel. And right before we hit the artificial turf, he takes a big drag and he flicks it back, and I'm kind of like, oh, this is going to be interesting. I think we lost.
Yeah, you won't see that anymore nowadays.
No, we lost 5-1. All right, let's get into Christian, because obviously your father, you've got exceptional work ethic, consistent training habits, passion for the game. This is passed on by father to son. Speak to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was my own player. Obviously, I'm a lot different than Christian is now. I grew up in a different time. So, definitely had some influence on him and not only, his ability with the ball, but just kind of molding him into the player and, you know, helping him just really enjoy the game and have a passion for it and understand that if you want to be, you know, the best at something or to excel at the highest level at something, it's just going to take a tremendous amount of work and perseverance and sacrifice.
Was that there from the word go with Christian, or was there a time period you saw it just kind of crystallize?
No, it was always there. I mean, you know, he was young, you know, playing at 5, 6, 7 years old. You know, he just loved it, you know, and just wanted to win all the time. And, you know, if anything, he tried to pump the brakes a little bit and make sure he enjoyed other sports and had other opportunities to go out. And, you know, we just wanted to expose him to other sports and other things in life and made sure he did well in school. And, you know, we just never really pushed soccer, even though my wife and I both played.
Mark Pulisic joining us here at Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. I think that's incredible what you just said there for people to listen to, right? Because it is an era of specialization, and it doesn't seem like it was 100% specialization as a youth player for Christian.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, you just have to work. You just have to make sure they're enjoying what they're doing. And, you know, that's the most important thing. It's just, you know, they knew that the player that, you know, your child needs to be the one who decides they want to go out and knock the ball around and work on the game. And, you know, it's difficult, you know, now with in this country, with there's so many opportunities, so many things and so many choices these kids have now. So I think it's important you expose them to a lot of different things, and then they kind of find their own path and passion.
Mark, at what point do you look at your son and you go, okay, he's got something special here. We aim higher.
I mean, I don't think we ever wanted to aim higher. I think, you know, my wife and I saw him as a young athlete and being able to run fast and have just natural gift of running and quickness and speed and agility. And, you know, once we saw that combined with how much work he put in as a youngster with a ball at his feet, we definitely knew that he had something a bit special. And we just kind of help to nurture that in any way we can, any way we could.
So what's the chronology getting to Dortmund? Because, you know, as we all know, the Bundesliga teams do like the American player. How does that all, you know, come to fruition? How does that happen? And then the next thing you know, he's at Dortmund.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was a lot of sacrifice. I mean, you know, he decided he had opportunities even younger, but at 15 going on 16, you know, we sat him down and told him that there was an opportunity. You know, he was scouted at basically U15, 14, 15 U.S. national team tournament in Turkey, I believe it was. And they saw him, and they, you know, contacted us and said they'd love to have him in the academy. And, you know, I made sure that they knew that I would have to go along and that I was leaving my work. So there had to be, you know, some smart financial decisions and that I had to make and I had to discuss with the club. And we agreed to a lot of different things. And we said, look, you know, spoke with Christian and said, look, you know, this is an opportunity to enjoy it and just go out and, you know, see how you... Yeah, you compare, and he just took it and ran with it. You know, it's we always told him if it doesn't work out, you know, so many opportunities elsewhere. Come back, go to college. You can have good education, move on, play professionally in the United States. And but playing in Europe was always something he, as a youngster, wanted to try. So we obviously supported him in that, and when he ended up going to Dortmund, he just took off, and coaches really helped him from the U17, U19, and then even before he got to U19, he was with the first team. So it just happened so quickly that he got his professional debut at 17.
Unbelievable. Mark Pulisic joining us. By the way, I've called a game in Dortmund. It's unbelievable, fans. Mark, there was a point when you were staying over there that you said, okay, it's time for me to fly. It's time for me to kind of pull away from being in and around my son in Dortmund. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I stayed there, you know, obviously being 15, 16, and then once he turned 17, I left. And so I was there for about a good year and a half, 2 years. I think it was a full 2 years. And then, you know, he was playing regularly with the first team. He was becoming a man. So it was time for him to sink or swim. And, you know, he needed to make decisions on his own, and whether they'd be correct decisions or decisions that he would, you know, maybe learn from in the, as he was moving along in the system there at Dortmund. And, we thought it was time to let him go, and it happened to work out perfectly. It was good timing, and he continued to excel.
Yeah, I can only say this from an outsider standpoint. The way he carries himself is exceptional. I mean, the fact that he's the captain of the national team doesn't surprise me. Just the way he handles himself in interviews after running his tail off for 90 minutes and playing in highly emotional games. I just think it's phenomenal. It's such a great example. As I continue on, he goes to Chelsea, and, you know, like every pro athlete and everybody in life, there's some disappointment, there are challenges. Is there anything you can say about the time at Chelsea?
It was a great step, and, you know, it was, you know, for me, those 4 years at Chelsea were just fantastic for him. He learned, he you know, did extremely well, and then he suffered a bit, you know, with some injuries and continual changing of managers, and it just strengthened him as a player, as a human, and not everything went his way. And, you know, we always told him growing up, and, you know, it's going to be how you accept and how you deal with those challenges, those tough times, and how you can get through those, you know. A lot of players try and go overseas. Some succeed, some don't. It's not for everyone. But for sure, going to England and playing in the Premier League was just a massive step for him, and he took it. And, you know, ends up winning a Champions League, ends up winning Super Cup, Club World Cup. I mean, I don't think you could look at that, you know, first 2-3 years as anything but an unbelievable success. And, you know, especially that he had such a major role to play in all those, trophies and, Champions League run. I thought his form was very good, and he really was a big part of that run there for the Champions League. And then, you know, and then unfortunately they changed, you know, with the whole thing with, Abramovich, and they, you know, the Russian-Ukraine thing, Abramovich ends up leaving, and just unfortunately they brought in some owners that just weren't ready to accept or excel in the role that they took over.
So now, Mark, it's been so much fun to watch him at Milan. He's been the player of the month. He's consistently dangerous every game. I think there's a lot of new Milan fans in the United States. In fact, I ran into one in a record store the other day with the last name Pulisic on there, and I started talking to him, and he's a young guy, and he's just such a fan of Christian and what he does and how he plays the game. But Stefano Pioli, it seems to me, has really given him a tremendous amount of confidence as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, he went in there and, like any good coach, you know, he looks at his, you know, what his strengths are and puts him in a position to, to succeed, you know, by just trusting him and believing in him you know, allowing him to have a down day or a down training session, but believing in his ability to bounce back and then with that confidence, obviously, you get from the coach and, you know, your willingness to try things and kind of bring out all your repertoire of what you can do and not feel so restricted has definitely helped him. So it's definitely been a good positive start.
Well, Mark, listen, we got to wrap it up. We're up on a hard break. Listen, I want to thank you very much for doing this, not only doing it live and coming on tonight on an evening where you might be doing something else. I already bothered you on the golf course, right? So we won't do that again. But listen, this was an exceptional interview. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. Mark Pulisic. Wow, that's some really interesting stuff from the father of Christian Pulisic. That's going to do it tonight for us. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Get it at Spotify, Google, Apple, that's where the podcasts are, or ESPN975.com. Differing content over at YouTube Soccer Matters. We're trying to boost our numbers of subscribers. And all you got to do is click. Come on, go over there. Do me a favor, right? Do us a favor. Because you know soccer matters. All right, until next Wednesday. We go Wednesday and Thursday next week. I'm Glenn Davis for Guillermo Lazo Romero, our producer. Remember, soccer matters.